Hello and welcome to another Light Reading podcast. My name is Phil Harvey. I'm an editor here at Light Reading.
Hello, and I'm Bill Thompson, Vice President of Marketing and Product Management at DC Blocks.
Bill, thank you so much for taking some time.
Great to be here. Thanks, Phil.
Yep, and we are recording live, so in case you hear any noise in the background, we're recording live at the Data Center World Show in Washington, D.C., where honestly, the weather is so good, it's physically hurting me to sit inside and be in conferences today because it is so gorgeous outside. But let's talk about what you're here to talk about, Bill. First of all, our audience probably has heard of DC Blocks, but in case they haven't, give us a little bit of background on what you guys do and how you sort of stand out in this competitive business.
Sure. So DC Blocks is an owner, operator, builder of data centers. Mm-hmm. And we have focused our energy in the southeastern United States. Mm-hmm. Started out building co-location facilities in some of the underserved markets in the region. Cities like Birmingham, Alabama, right. Chattanooga, Tennessee, Greenville, South Carolina. And it turns out that businesses in those regions have the same need for digital transformation and digital infrastructure as the major NFL cities.
Right.
But the global data center operators just not building in smaller regions like that.
Right. Although now one of the things that people talked up a lot at the Optical Fiber Conference, OFC, that I was at a few weeks ago, is that because of the power demands of data centers, they are starting to move data centers out to those spaces. Maybe you guys know something about that.
So we have found, so that was our original strategy. We've served a lot of good businesses and enterprises and universities in those markets. Mm-hmm. We also found an opportunity for some of the larger tech companies, hyperscalers as we would call them, coming into town most people know, they're trying to build infrastructure closer to their consumers and their business users, and they're very focused on the Southeast right now and many other parts of the world.
Yeah.
So we found ourselves with a unique opportunity to first build a cable landing station in Myrtle Beach, right. South Carolina, in order to land some of those hyperscalers subsea cables.
Wow.
And then, a dark fiber network across South Carolina and Georgia to the communications hub of Georgia, of Atlanta. And then, because of those relationships and because of the massive investment we saw coming into the region, begin to start some more hyperscale ready projects.
Right.
So we have acquired land, two large plots of land outside of Atlanta and another in South Carolina, and reserve power in order to serve the needs of these incoming hyperscalers. And yes, space and power is a big need of theirs.
Yeah.
And we are, in the midst of, addressing that and, helping to clear the way for some of the upcoming customers.
So just because of the demands of these four or five big companies, maybe fewer than that, but maybe three or four companies, they're, they basically guided you from being a data center provider to data center provider, dark fiber service provider, bandwidth operator. What else?
Indeed. I mean, our first strategy took us to, envisioning that there was a need in these smaller markets.
Right.
And now we are largely responding to a massive demand of new data center infrastructure, dark fiber infrastructure, lit services infrastructure, subsea cable landing station infrastructure. So it's all coming together. And fortunately, we've had an opportunity to play in a lot of different roles.
Yeah. Yeah. It is interesting how this, because this, this is all happening, like, give us a timeline, maybe in the last 5 years or so.
For us, we've been building since 2014,
right.
In these smaller markets. The hyperscale demand being driven by a number of different factors. Mm-hmm. A lot of the business and space and power that was going to Northern Virginia is now heading south in some other regions because of the limited power availability there.
Right.
Georgia and Atlanta area is one of the beneficiaries of some of that shift.
Yeah.
On top of the fact that these companies want to build their cloud infrastructure in regions around the world. So the Southeast is a very big target.
Yeah, it is interesting because it's like you said, the Northeast is too congested. California, maybe the geography or the tax situation isn't as attractive. And so places like Texas and the Southeast are becoming a lot more friendly for, you know, for building and for the various tech hubs setting up. So when you categorize companies as hyperscalers, do you think of content providers like Netflix as separate from that, or do you kind of put them all in the same bucket?
They're in the same bucket, in the sense that they all have a need to be closer to consumers,
right,
and their business users. They're not in the same bucket in terms of the investments they necessarily want to make on their own. So
okay,
the companies like Netflix will leverage space and power that might have been built to be able to come into a region. The hyperscalers will invest a substantial okay amount, either their own builds or working through partners like us.
Yeah, I'm curious about that kind of thing, because the other, you know, right along with that growth and just sort of general purpose cloud computing, and of course the, you know, the hyperscaler cloud with all the AI services and other search and other things that they're bringing, is we've had this like explosion of streaming media and streaming content and stuff like that. Has that affected your business in a remarkable way, kind of alongside this, or how does that sort of play in?
Not to date, but I would say what's happening now is going to benefit them and many others.
Okay.
So in a way, what we build is shared infrastructure.
Right.
We build co-location data centers. We build a cable landing station that can land subsea cables from many different operators. We're building a dark fiber route. Certainly, some of our initial customers will take some amount of capacity, but
sure,
we have a lot more capacity to make available to local businesses, to content providers, to streaming companies. So when we build this infrastructure, that does attract those types of companies into
okay
the region. They may want to co-locate in our cable landing station because there's a lot of data coming in and out of this, you know, the country in that particular region. They
sure
may want to be into one of our regional co-location data centers to be close to where that, you know, that concentration of data is going and coming.
What's the timeline on the dark fiber build out now, or is it already complete and you're looking for customers, or is it and can you give us any parameters on what the overall size of the investment was?
Sure. So the dark fiber route that is connecting our Myrtle Beach cable landing station in South Carolina to the Atlanta area, and then beyond that to Lithia Springs, where there's another concentration of data centers, should be completed by the end of this month.
Okay.
We have been selling it. We do have some customers signed up to use it. We're excited to get them up and running.
Great.
We have also announced that we'll be building a metro ring around Atlanta.
Okay.
That'll be connecting some of our new data center projects that are in development right now.
Wow.
And then because of the customers we're entertaining who need not only data center space, but high capacity fiber connecting them or connecting in the new facilities,
mm-hmm,
there'll be further expansions off of our, what you might consider our regional backbone up till this point.
So like all the data center providers here, you guys are huge consumers and sort of partners with the communication service providers, the big telecom companies and cable companies. What can those companies do more of or do differently to kind of make their services easier to consume, their network services easier to use? Do you have a wish list or some takeaways from them, or what's been your experience overall?
I mean, I would say one opportunity for them, as we're building out the cable landing station, again, the cable landing station is completed. Some of our customers that will be bringing in subsea cables haven't completed their work yet.
Okay.
And we have more capacity that's coming in. And as you can imagine, most subsea cable owners, operators lease some of the fibers,
right,
on those subsea cables, which means right now we know that there'll be likely business coming in from Brazil and Uruguay and Argentina and Portugal and Spain. So there is going to be a significant need for connectivity from that Myrtle Beach cable landing station to various parts of the United States.
Okay.
So we certainly envision that as being a global and connectivity hub for the region, and we expect that we'll see, and we've already seen some evidence of some of the larger carriers and communications providers wanting to be connected into that space.
Sounds like a conspiracy to get me to buy a timeshare in Myrtle Beach, but I'll withhold my judgment for now.
That's a good idea, though.
Yeah, right. Always, for those who can't see the podcast, he's tucking a brochure into my pocket right now. When you know, one of the bigger themes, you know, or the two big themes here at this show so far, of course, have been, well, continuation of a theme is AI, you know, and how the various enterprise need for either to scale up an artificial intelligence infrastructure or to kind of get ready for it and kind of figure out, you know, what they're going to need. What's been the knock-on effect to your business, you know, of this sort of interest? Now, obviously, one of those we've already covered, which is just the sheer sort of ramp up in capacity. Has there been anything else that's sort of fallen out of that?
Sort of two angles on that. And again, because we have co-location data centers in some of these smaller markets, most of our markets have universities nearby.
Sure.
They're doing a lot of research, and they have some pretty high-performance compute applications that they need in a data center.
Right.
So we found that our standard, you know, 8 to 10 kilowatt you know, density for a rack wasn't sufficient to meet some of their needs.
Okay.
So we went out and we designed a special high density co-location data hall and built that out initially in our Birmingham facility to support local universities' high performance computing needs. And now that we have the standard design that fits onto the standard design of our other facilities, we can add those into every market that, that might have a need. So that's kind of the local, smaller, you know, opportunity. The larger one is, again, the hyperscalers, as you might imagine, have pretty ambitious goals in the AI space. Still up till this point, most of the business that we're entertaining is more around expanding their cloud regions.
Okay.
But we see right on that, right on the heels of that, the questions about, well, how can we expand and how will density be able to be improved as we come in with future workloads?
Yeah.
And we are building with that design in mind, at the very least, to making sure that we have liquid taps into all of our data centers to be able to allow a more sufficient, you know, liquid cooled solution when and, you know, if and when that, you know, those higher density workloads come in.
Right. Because whatever they're building now, you can imagine it's going to densify and scale. It's, you know, almost faster than they can order it.
Indeed. And in fact, you know, again, we're reserving land, we're reserving power, and we're seeing the demand now based on what I would call a little bit of the forefront of AI, but mostly existing cloud infrastructure as we would know it.
Yeah.
But there's going to be another giant wave behind that, which is really when AI hits a, you know, more of a critical mass.
Right.
And a lot of these same companies and more will have a very strong need for that, you know, capacity, space, and power. And as rapidly as the local utilities are ramping up their abilities, are going to have to continue to do that, because there's going to be another wave of power demands that's probably even greater than the one they're facing today.
Yeah, it's interesting, because it's like, you know, the short-term fix of all this, maybe in the next year or two, is like they were saying at OFC, is just, you know, building them in different separate power grids, you know, building their next data center in a different power grid than the one, don't cluster them around cities and that sort of thing, and then interconnect them all. But, you know, beyond that, what do they do next?
Yeah. Well, I think the architectures are still being developed.
Sure.
And my guess is the architectures will evolve somewhat around power availability. Mm-hmm. So we know that some of the most highly dense data centers, where they're at the learning models and such, are being located, will have a, you know, significant power demand, and they'll have to build, make sure they have that power. But there are many other, what we'll call inference applications. So they're closer to the end users, which will of course need to connect back to those learning models for data, but there'll be lower density requirements and more distributed. And we won't say there'll be it'll fit into any existing data center model, but it'll be less, it'll require less power than the, you know, what we'll call the core data, you know, learning modules.
Okay. Well, this has been incredibly interesting for me, and hopefully for our audience. Bill Thompson, thanks so much for taking a few moments and for being on the Light Reading Podcast.
Great. Thanks for having me, Phil.